We are having a transition, so to speak, topic this week to what will be our final Bishalakum topic. Our final Bishalakum topic, which will take us at least 2 weeks to cover, is the issue of how to transform what would appear to be Bishalakum into none other than Bishal Yisrael. To what extent does Jewish participation in the process get you out of all problems? To what extent do you need Jewish participation is the question. But, excuse me, as a transition for that, I wanted to do one self-contained unit, which has two other specifics where the question of perhaps leniency connects above and beyond, as I say, any other considerations we've seen until now or what we will see subsequently. This is its independent issue, and that is really two issues. One is a little bit more involved, and the other one is more minor, but two issues. One is the question of kavana, of intent. We know that there is such a concept of kavanah in other areas of mitzvos. We don't always have it in something that would be similar to this. But to what extent does the non-Jew have to have intent to be cooking, so to speak, for you in order to create the problem? Or do we not care? Doesn't matter what his intentions are. And if we say that it depends, you know, then he really does need it. So the question is, what constitutes intent for something like this? That's an interesting question, which... there's at least, it's an interesting academic question, and there's at least one somewhat surprising practical issue which is very related to this. And then finally, just as a PS, so to speak, just the last thing we'll mention in brief is the question of what do you do when you're in a case of doubt? This could very, very easily happen of you can't remember what happened, you left something on the oven with the cleaning lady, so to speak. Certainly in restaurants and stuff, this can happen all the time when you're not sure what happened. In a little bit, we'll overlap with what we're going to see in future weeks, which we haven't gotten to yet, which is relates to the issue of Jewish participation, namely, what if the Jew or the non-Jew, depending on how the case starts, cooks the food partially, and then the other comes in? If the Jew starts cooking, and then the non-Jew comes in, is that sufficient to be lenient? And in the other direction, what if the non-Jew starts cooking it, but then the Jew finishes the job? Is that sufficient to be lenient? But on a related point, of course, is the question of, let's assume that in certain cases we would be lenient. But what if you're not sure where the Jew started, where the non-Jew ended? So what about any case of doubt? Do you have a right to be lenient, et cetera, et cetera? So that'll be just a PS at the end of this year. But the first issue I want to mention, which, again, starts off with some very exotic cases, but hopefully we'll bring it down to earth, so to speak, and that is the question of the intent of the non-Jew. So this comes from a relatively, by our standards, relatively lengthy little section of Gemara, but it's a little bit repetitive and it's entertaining. So the words are hard, but it's entertaining. This is from, again, the topics we've been focusing on have been in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Ches, and the Gemara says as follows. Amar Rav Bruna Amar Rav, Oved Kochavim, if you have a non-Jew, Sheheitzis Es Ha'or Ba'agam, who, let's say, burns out some kind of a marsh or a creek. Again, Lahavdil, sometimes you see this like from war movies. I don't exactly know how they do that, but you can set a body of water on fire. There is a way. Not accidentally, I don't think, not too often. I couldn't do it, but there is a way to do that. Let's say you're burning out a marsh. Shehetiz es ha'or ba'agam. So what happens? There are all sorts of bugs and fish and grasshoppers who, again, that may not be your intent, but they end up getting, for lack of a better word, cooked. And this is, again, I'm not getting into all into these side issues, but it is worth knowing, if you don't know already, that there are some forms of grasshoppers which are kosher. Some people even find them appealing. I do not, but that's why I don't know too much about it. But there are some forms of grasshoppers that are kosher. So what does the Gemara say? Kol ha-chagovim sheba'agam asurim. Even if they're then, you know, draining whatever, or cleaning out whatever's left of this lake, and you have a whole big pile of yummy, yummy grasshoppers, you're not allowed to eat them. Asurim. So the Gemara asks, Hey Dalad, that's Hey Chidami, what are we talking about? Right? If it's me, and you don't know which species are kosher, and which are not, and that's the issue, my area over kachavim, then who cares that it was a non-Jew who burnt out the creek? Afila Yisrael Nami. That has nothing to do with who was the one who actually, quote, cooked these grasshoppers. If the issue is, I don't know which ones are kosher, which are not kosher, so understandably, you're dealing with a very serious prohibition if you would eat the wrong ones. So, safek lechumra, you're in doubt, so that's what we would understand such a psak. But then it doesn't make sense. Why did the Gemara go out of its way to seem to describe the case as dafka a non-Jew? So, the Gemara says, what must you see from this? Ela mishum bishule ovde kochavim. It must be that the Gemara is speaking about it from a different perspective, namely, the issue of bishul akum. After all, if you assume that these are now cooked, it was a non-Jew who cooked them, a non-Jew who set the fire. Ki hai gavna mi usr. And if that's the case, then what was the implication of the Gemara? That even though, again, this seems to be obvious from the way that the Gemara frames the case, the non-Jew had no intention. He's trying to burn out the marsh. He doesn't care about cooking these grasshoppers. He's trying to get rid of everything. But yet, apparently, if we would leave it at this, unintentional, bli kavana, it doesn't matter, we're still going to be machmir. That seems to be the implication. But the Gemara, even though it recognizes that that's the implication, the Gemara is not willing to accept that. Is that really true? Ki hai gavna, in such a case, mi usir, is that really prohibited? After all, I'm now reading the underlined part. V'ha amar Rabbi Chanan bar Ami, amar Rav Pedas, amar Rav Yochanan. Don't we have the following previous, prior authoritative tradition? Hai Ovid kochavim, now we have another exotic case. The charich resha. Let's say you have an animal that has been shechted properly. So I actually once had misfortune, to be in an actual slaughterhouse in Israel. I went, and I didn't see chickens. So it is unbelievably grotesque. I mean, the blood is just everywhere. But one of the things which is, depending on your perspective, like if I would be my 5-year-old son, I would say really, really cool, is how they skin the cow once it's been killed. Now, modern technology, the animal's hanging from all fours anyway, suspended in air. They get a little bit, so there's a little give, and then they put it, it looks like a roller. And it literally just pulls it off in one big... It's pretty incredible, from mechanically speaking. But I just raise the issue because, forget halacha, who wants to eat that stuff, right? To prepare the meat, you get rid of the skin. So apparently, in the time of the Gemara, it was a lot less exotic the way they did it. Apparently, they used to singe the hair off. So, says the Gemara, what if in the process of singeing, it's already a dead animal. That's not a question of, and if you burn an animal to death, that's not a kosher animal, right? That's an avela. But if, let's say it's shechted, right, with chasidish shechit, as we say. But now you're just trying to prepare it so it can be taken to the butcher and salted and, made into lamb chops. And you are singeing the hair. And what happens if, that's only supposed to be a very superficial, process. But let's say it got to the point where it actually somehow cooked or made edible the meat. Would that be a problem of bishalakum? So that's the case in question. Now that's the underlying part. Hai Ovid Kochavim, the Charech Reshe, someone who singes the head of a given animal. Again, you have this non-Jewish worker for you. He singes the head. Again, he's trying to get rid of the hair. Shari Lamechol Mine. The Gemara Paskins, that you're nevertheless allowed to eat that food. Afilu meresh one. Even, again, from the tips of the ears. Anyone ever eat ear before? Knowingly? Okay, everyone try to swallow deeply. What's the point? The point is, apparently, again, I guess this is a little bit intuitive, that's very, whatever the word is, fleshy, whatever the word is not tough. That cooks very quick. So the fear is, even if you say, well, only in 5-10 seconds, whatever it takes to singe the hair, so obviously on some level the heat impacts the meat, but minimally it didn't make the food edible at all. It couldn't be meaningfully called cooking, so maybe there it's obvious when you would talk about the torso or the thigh or something, of course that's not going to be bishul akum. But these ears, which could be in a second cooked, apparently that's the assumption here, and I don't think anyone here wants to do any further investigation of it. We'll just take it as a given. So if that's the case, perhaps we should have been worried that it was cooked by an Ajo. And yet, what do we paskin? That it's okay. What's the implication there? Alma, we see, middle of that fourth line. La'avure se'ar kamachavein. Why must it be permitted? Because this non-Jew's were just, all his intent is to remove the hair. He's not intending to cook it. Maybe he did cook part of the animal. That's okay. That's not a problem of bishalakum when there's no intent to cook. So now you understand, hachanami legluye agma kamachavein. This goes in contradistinction to what we saw before. Because in the first case, the guy just wanted to clear out the marsh, the creek. He didn't want to cook the grasshoppers. So if we see from the case with singeing of the hair, that if you don't have intent, it's permissible, here too, in the case of clearing out the agam, the grasshoppers should be, for those who are so inclined, permissible to eat.
Now we even need to argue a stronger case, because this guy's actually burning the cow, as opposed to the guy who's burning the marsh, and happens to kill the animal, but he's not even
okay.
Fire to
okay,
the
fair enough. But either way, the bottom line is, the main point is, if there's no intent, apparently it's permissible, and yet, the case we began with, it implied that we don't care about intent, we're going to be machmir anyway.
So are we left with
a
question on
Rav Huna? Yes, well, now we have to try to answer it. What's going on? This second case seems to be in conflict with the first case. So the Gemara says, Li olam, what must be the first case with the marsh and the grasshoppers? Lo yada heitar heitame. The only reason that we said to be machmir there is because you just don't know, like most of us wouldn't, what's a kosher grasshopper, what's a non-kosher grasshopper. But in Hanami, really, even the authors of that case agree in principle that if the only question is intent, if there is no intent on the part of the non-Jew to cook, then we are makil. And the only reason they were machmir in that case was for this side, irrelevant to our purposes, reason of just not being clear on the species. We had asked before, well, if that's the consideration, then who cares if the guy who burnt out the marsh is Jewish or non-Jewish? You should not be able to eat them either way, says the Gemara. No. You're right. It's just that the case is reported that way, not to try to teach us a halacha, because that's the case. It's the joke, in Eretz Yisrael, that they had to import all these laborers from Asia and all sorts of places after this new intifada, once they stopped letting, giving very tight controls over the Palestinians for coming in. Why do they have to bring them plenty of people in Israeli jobs? Jews don't do certain jobs. That's whether they should or shouldn't do it, right? Jews have a certain mentality. So here also the Gemara says, it could have been a non-Jew, but who goes and burns out marshes? It was a non-Jew. But that wasn't, we reported the story as it was, not to teach us a halacha. Because the halacha that they were trying to teach us was that if you're not sure about what species of grasshopper, you can't eat it. And that has nothing to do with bishalakum, it has nothing to do with whether the person who burnt out the marsh was Jewish or non-Jewish. If you'll ask the question from the bishalakum perspective, then the Gemara says we give you the same answers we gave when it came to singeing the hair. If there's no intent to cook, then even if accidentally, so to speak, or unintentionally, an animal was cooked by a non-Jew, it is still permissible. That's where we're holding in this Gemara. And in fact, the Gemara continues to just try to confirm that. I'm reading now at the end of that fifth line. Gufa Amar Rav Barchana. The Gemara then changes some of the later redactions of the text, change who it was. In parentheses, you see Rav Chanan Bar Ami, whoever, Amar Rav Yochanan. Bottom line, Hayova Kochavim, the Charach Resha, if you singe the hair, Shari Lemichomene, Afilim Resh One, even the ears. Because, again, we see this is, if it's unintentional, it's okay. The Gemara adds one final case. This is the one that the least stomach churning. Amar Ravina Hilkach, so what would we emerge from this case? Hayova Kochavim, the Shada Sikta La'atuna. This non-Jew had some kind of a peg. It was a wet peg or something like that, and he needed to dry it. So he threw it into the oven just so it would dry. It's not an edible thing. He's not trying to cook. He's trying to dry this peg. But little did he know, unbeknownst to him, the cover by Yisrael, kara me'ekara. Beforehand, hidden underneath some of the logs or whatever, was the Jew had put in a gourd, some kind of a vegetable or something that needs to be cooked, and something that needs an edible raw. So the question is, after the non-Jew finishes, turning up the fire to dry out his peg, unbeknownst to him, he had just cooked this vegetable for the Jew. So what do we see? But what follows from everything we've seen until now? Shapir dami is permissible. The Gemara asks Pita, well, it's obvious it's permissible if you told me about, right? If I haven't lost my appetite, but I know from the monkey ears, from the ears, and from the this, and from the that, I know that it's okay, from the grasshoppers, whatever, we know it's okay. So the Gemara gives one final point. Mahu Dusema, what might you have thought? This is a little bit similar to what you mentioned before. Lebeshule mana kamechave. Maybe we look at it as, quote, cooking, quote unquote, the peg. Meaning it wasn't like totally unintentional, like the grasshopper's case, or even the singeing of the hair where he didn't want to actually have a full process of heat. It was just a momentary thing. Here he really wanted to use heat to transform the object, which on a certain level you would consider, again, if this was a food item, it's the exact same thing as you would do to the food item. It's just that it's a peg. So maybe you would have thought that that counts as, quote, cooking, and since he wanted to do that, we should count that as if he wanted to cook the food for the Jew. Kamash Malan, no. Lesharure mana kamachavin. He was trying to strengthen the peg, and that has nothing to do with cooking, and therefore if this guy's vegetable got cooked, it's his lucky day. There's no problem. There's no penalty of bishulakum. So what emerges from this, as I say, somewhat entertaining Gemara, perhaps you beg to differ. Was it entertaining? It's certainly out of the ordinary Gemara. Bottom line, the Gemara seems to conclude, if in some form or another the cooking done by the non-Jew was unintentional, there is no penalty that would prohibit you from eating the food. Now, there are a lot of different ways we could go with this, but one which is just worth mentioning briefly is the parenthetical comment. I'm just going to read this for you, I'll paraphrase it for you outside. But Tosfos here points out that we have a similar case when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, where you're putting something in a fire just to strengthen it, and there we do consider that on Shabbos a violation of Bishul. It's a transgression of Shabbos. So Tosfos asks, if that's the case, then why is it not the same standard here? Here, if you're just trying, on the last case, where the guy's trying to, quote, strengthen his peg, so that very act of trying to, you know, very often he does, right? See, heat softens certain foods and hardens others. So the very act of apparently of hardening something is considered cooking from a Shabbos perspective. So this last case should be considered a case where the guy is trying to cook. And then that should have prohibited our vegetable. And Tosfos answers one or maybe two answers. It's not 100% clear the way he says it, but it seems to be one or two. Basically, he says, listen, first of all, Shabbos is a daraisa, so we have higher standards or lower standards as the case may be. Easier to violate, we're more strict as opposed to bishulakum. And as he then adds, it's not just a question of daraisa and darabanan, and he says, there it's what's called a bishul garua. It's not really cooking, even in that case, but it's a little bit of a type of cooking. And for Shabbos, that's already sufficient. But when it comes to bishulakum, this whole chumrah that if a non-Jew cooks for you, even if the food is otherwise kosher, you still can't eat it. So that, this what's called bishul garua, this nevuch cooking, that's not sufficient. You need a bishul gamur. So that's just parenthetically. Again, if you happen to be familiar with this halacha and hilchos Shabbos, you shouldn't be confused. We have, as it often is the case, different standards in different areas of halacha, even though everything else is exactly similar. But we have a different and more strict standard there. Just to take a look at the third source there is the Rambam. You'll just see how he paskins this general case. Says the Rambam, Akum shebishel v'lo niskavein lebishul. A non-Jew who cooked for you, but it was unintentional. Hari ze mutar. It's permissible. And he gives the examples. What's the first example he gives? Ketzad, akum sheitzis, or ba'agam. It's the case of burning out the marsh, or the creek, whatever you want to call it, to get rid of, and you get the grasshoppers. He adds this interesting point. I was thinking about this myself until I saw the Rambam on the second line. He adds to the fact that perhaps one was thinking from what we've seen in previous weeks. Well, who would eat grasshoppers? That's disgusting. Is that Ola al Shulchan Malachim? Right? Does the queen have grasshoppers for breakfast? Or her state dinner? So the Rambam points out, Enechanami, that the only Shaila is in the case, he says, Afilu b'makom shein Ola al Shulchan Malachim. I'm sure somewhere in the world this is Ola al Shulchan Malachim. Right? Isn't that true? Aren't chocolate covered grasshoppers ever considered a little bit of a delicacy in certain places? Right! There you go. So the Rambam is aware. Okay, so everything is in its time and place. That's just an important parenthetical point as well. And then in the last case, the Rambam continues. He gives you also the other case of the Gemara, of the singeing of the hair in the animal, etc. Look at the next. This is to see how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. Yes.
I don't understand the point. If you have a fire and he puts more wood in.
Who said he put more wood in?
He's pegging.
Yeah.
So why is that cooking? We're not talking about starting a fire. The other case is he has a fire and he's using it with the fire.
Let's say he started the fire. That's not the point. The point is, why did he start the fire? If the fire is already going, he just threw his peg in. Your gourd was already cooking. So that's a separate. That's completely permissible. That's a separate issue.
Okay, that's right.
No. He's cooking or whatever you want to use. He's hardening his peg. He didn't know, apparently, and we'll see why that's important shortly. He didn't know that you also had some food in there, and then your food taka got cooked.
You just put food in the oven and didn't do anything.
You were waiting for someone to come along. You didn't have a match. Okay. What does Shulchan Aruch say? Ovid kol chavim shebishel v'lon kavim lebishel mutar. Right, straight psak as we've seen until now. He gives the first case of the burning out of the creek with the grasshoppers. Second line, right in the middle, har el mutar. Now I have the underlined part. Aval im kivein l'shem bishol. But what must you have if the non-Jew has intent to cook? Kigon, shehisik hatanur levashel bo. He turns up the flame, he starts the fire, he throws in the match, he starts the cooking process to cook for himself. V'hayyubo boser t'chila v'nitzla. And there happened to be food in there of yours. And it gets roasted. Even though he didn't want to cook your meat, he wanted to cook his meat. It does it. He didn't even know you had meat in there. He turned on the fire for his own meat. Nevertheless, usser. So it's a very fine line. It's not that as long as he doesn't have intent to cook for me, it's permissible. That would be an incorrect formulation. The halacha, as understood by the Shulchan Aruch, that emerges is, as long as the non-Jew has no intent to cook, singeing the hair, burning out a creek, those are not cooking processes. And the Gemara, the one case that the Gemara wasn't sure about, the quote, cook, the one that's closest and most similar to cooking, when you throw the peg in the oven, even that's not considered cooking, that's considered hardening. So any of that process or anything similar in which the non-Jew is doing something that's not considered cooking, but one of the impacts of his actions is that accidentally, unintentionally, your food got cooked, then it's your lucky day, you can benefit, it's permissible. But if the non-Jew wants to cook, he just may not want to cook your thing, right? You're in some kind of a communal oven or something, I don't know. You're in a dorm, I mean, I don't know if they have communal bathrooms, I shouldn't have communal ovens. So let's say you have some meat in there, and again, either you forgot, or maybe it takes a quarter to start the oven, I don't know, whatever the case is, you didn't do anything, your meat's just in there. He turns on the fire, and then, you know, to warm up, pre-warm the oven. Then he goes to get his piece of meat and he puts it in. Sure enough, he opens the door. He says, whoa, someone left a piece of meat in there. You come back 15 minutes later, either planning to turn on the oven yourself, you thought your Jewish roommate was going to do the cooking, who knows, but turns out, oh no, the guy down the hall who's obviously not Jewish is the one who cooked it. So the one in you might have said, well, it's okay, he didn't intend to cook my meat, he didn't even know I had meat in there. No. That's already still too close. If he intends to cook, because he intended to cook his own meat, he intends to cook, then the Shulchan Aruch is machmir, and you do not get to have the side benefit of the fact that he accidentally cooked your food. Because it's true he didn't know about your food, but he did want to cook. And if he wanted to cook, that's just the way Chazal made the gzeira, we prohibit it. Okay? Now, one thing we haven't addressed at all, but it's worth noting, and worth thinking about for a moment, why should any of this make a difference? Why should it be permissible? Why don't we say that there's a halakha called bishul akum, a non-Jew can't cook for you, and unless you meet some other criteria or you're to be permissible, it's not fancy enough food, it's edible raw, or whatever we'll start learning next week, where the Jew really participated in the process, you turned on the oven, whatever the case may be. But short of that, who cares what his intentions were? The bottom line was he cooked for you, it should be prohibited. What's the basis to begin with of this leniency? It's never actually addressed in the Gemara, just stated as a fact. Questioned, answered, but analyzed, but never explained. Why should this be permissible?
The whole point is to avoid getting intimate with that person. You're not going to get intimacy if they don't intend to do it for you.
Very good. So this is, I saw, and I didn't see anyone in the Gemara discussed it, but not even some of the mainstream Rishonim. The Rambam didn't add it. You know, it's interesting. Again, it's hard to know why, but the Rambam, in some of the cases we've seen until now, when the Rambam quoted a certain leniency, the question of Ola al-Shocham Malachim, the Rambam didn't just quote the halacha. The Rambam explained, because a food that's not so fancy, you won't likely invite someone over for. You know, and then we saw others who said that you won't feel appreciative of them. The bottom line is the whole fear of one thing leading to another and intermarriage, etc. The Rambam explained there that that's the reason. Here, the Gemara nor the Rambam are people of that mainstream ilk. None of them really gave that explanation. But there are some more obscure earlier authorities who did give an explanation, and I found it quoted in this contemporary sefer, which we've seen many times, the Chelkas ben Yamin. And he quotes, again, this is not his own idea, that he's in the footnotes, he tells you who he got this from, he says the following. Why should this be permissible at all? Mishum deleka kiruv hadas, betavshil shebishil hanachri b'lo kavana. There is no great sense of companionship or appreciation that's created when the only thing that happened was completely accidentally. And in such a case, you don't have to worry lechasunos of intermarriage, or the other fear, getting back to our first shir in Bishlakim 2 months ago, where we said perhaps the fear is that even though right now what you're eating is kosher, but if you get so close with him that you're regularly eating over, eventually you're going to run into a kashrus problem. That was the two theories behind the whole halacha of Bishlakim. But they're all predicated on a common denominator, both theories. And that has to do with a certain letting down of your guard, a certain intimacy that's created. Says these authorities, all of that is only even conceivable when he's cooking for you intentionally. But if he doesn't even know, right, he's just burning out an agam, and turns out that there's some grasshoppers, and some Jewish kids come by and say, ooh, grasshoppers. And they were cooked. Look at that. Our lucky day. So the gap is too wide that we're not going to make, you know, between what happened and what the fears of happening, we would never, ever, we would not make such a chumrah. That's the way he explains it. Yes?
Does this answer the Shulchan Aruch question?
What do you mean?
You know, they're okay, he's cooking.
I mean the last case.
He's still not cooking for you.
Correct. So there, apparently, the answer is, and we have seen this in other times, right, the question that you asked me last week, I think it was, about the factory workers, right? Some guys work in the, you know, the midnight to 8 o'clock shift, midnight to 9 shift, in a factory making who knows what, and I can't eat that because of Bishlakim, what I got to do with him and me? I mean, that's... So the answer is that despite the reasons, there are, as we see in many other areas of halacha, there are some places where Chazal drew a line and said, technically this is in, or sometimes it's lakula, but you know, technically this is out of the prohibition, even though totally taken to its logical conclusion, one might have reached an opposite conclusion. We have that in both directions, sometimes lakum, sometimes lakula. So here's an example, you're right, I was thinking about this, where you would say that it's a chumrah, meaning that Chazal, because of this motivational fear, this fear motivated Chazal to make a halacha, that a non-Jew cannot intentionally cook for you. What motivated the takana? This fear of intermarriage. But the bottom line, what was the takana? That he can't intentionally cook for you. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch is saying, if he intentionally tried to cook, even though he didn't know about your food, logically one could easily say that that should be lenient. But technically that falls under the gzeira of Chazal, because he intentionally cooked. But in a case where he's not even cooking at all, he thinks he's doing something else. But it happens to be that his action leads to food being cooked. So that's so far removed that Chazal did not include that in the gzeira. Now, while I was trying to think, what would be a case, you know, any hunters here, anyone's, any outdoorsmen or women, what would be a case where this could be really very practical? Because again, all sorts of accidents could happen in a kitchen, but if you're in a kitchen, you're trying to cook, presumably. So it would be hard to imagine. So I saw in this halachic prep packet, Halacha Brura, we've seen in the past, he gives a very interesting case, which I never would have thought of, but perhaps it's really very relevant. What do you say about this case? Look what he says. A power failure. Now again, I don't know, maybe in certain machines, like if the power goes off, so obviously the oven goes off. So what happens when the power goes back on? So there's probably like electronic type things, I don't know if they go on automatically. You might need to do something again. But certainly there are many types of contraptions, I mean, just like your clock, it doesn't get reset, but it goes right back on. So let's say you're something's cooking in the oven, then the power failure goes out. And then the electric company restores the power, and then, boom, the oven goes back on and cooks your food. So I think think about it, tell me what you think. I think he's right, I think that's an analogous case. Again, assuming that the power company is a non-Jewish entity, which is obviously a likely scenario. If it's a government-owned one, that's a different question. That's a very interesting, that's a meta halakha question. How do we view democratic governments? What is their status in halakha? This relates very much to the issue of stealing from the government. Is that considered stealing from non-Jews, which would be bad enough? Or is it even worse, is it considered Gezel Yisrael? But that's a separate issue. Leave us, let's assume it's a private company and it's non-Jews. They're considered, no, they don't have what's called, according to everybody, according to most poskim, corporations as an independent entity do not have standing in halacha. Not according to everyone, but according to most, that's correct. What it's considered is a massive shutfus. But let's say the shutfum are all non-Jews, or primarily non-Jews. This comes up to owning stocks in a company on Pesach, and it's chametz. Moshe has certain leniencies, even though he doesn't accept the leniency that the corporation, that would be the easiest leniency. I don't own the chametz, I own stock. Yeah, the corporation's an independent entity. The corporation owns chametz. But Moshe does not accept that. But he has other heterim in that case, who's the controlling person, whether it would be the CEO or the guy, the manager on the plant floor, whatever the case is. Let's assume, and it's very likely in most cases, you're not going to get any Jews anywhere there. Okay? So then, this is somebody who did something. Right, we assume in many other areas, like in Shabbos, right, that electricity is like turning on the fire. So if that's like he turned on the fire, what he did has nothing to do with cooking.
So it should be
no.
Because they turned on the oven.
No, they didn't turn on the oven. They turned on. Yeah, that's what he says. He's lenient. He's lenient here, and I think he's right, because that's like turning the fire on the agam. Exactly. Or, for that matter, the Sinjin case, or whatever the case may be. It's certainly better than the gourd case. Because there, as you said, that you put something in the oven. Here it's even less. Unless you want to say maybe it's like that. But even that, the Gemara says, is okay. That's not considered cooking. He has to have intent to cook. The guy who flipped the switch had no intent to cook. He had intent to turn on the electricity.
And the fact that he's 6 blocks away...
In theory, it would not be would not help you. But in point of fact, it's okay. I'll tell you, in the other direction, we'll see this, if not next week, in the week after, one of the heterim that contemporary kashrus organizations are now using, the high-tech kashrus organizations, are to have remote control capabilities for the mashgiach. That the ovens are programmed, they can't just be turned on by the people there. They have a code. And the mashgiach knows the code, the mashgiach could be at home, who knows where. They're ready to make a run, and he puts in whatever he does, remote control, and the oven turns on. It's unbelievable. And I think, I don't know how many people are using it, but I think it's undisputed that would be considered sufficient. So remote control per se is not an issue, l'kula or l'chumra. But in this case, he's not intending to cook, and therefore the halacha brura says it should be permissible. And again, I was having trouble myself thinking of what would be a good analogous case. And this could happen all the time. Right? What about if you're... Now, again, the question would be, or let's say something more practical. Let's say you have a live-in or something, or somebody non-Jewish in your house, and the fuse blows. And they turn on the fuse. Right? That's more close to home, but it's the exact same thing. They're not trying to cook. They're trying to turn on a fuse. It happens to be that one of the things that went out wasn't just your clock and just your phone, it was also your oven. So now all of a sudden it gets cooked because they turn back on the fuse. Doesn't matter, it's still permissible, because that's an example of a case where they obviously had no intention whatsoever. Now, there is another case which is somewhat more close to home. Again, it's a little bit outdated because of Baruch Hashem for advances in technology, but it's interesting that this was, not too many hundreds of years ago, a very practical case and a major machlokes. Turn over the page. The Chachmas Adam of Avram Danzig. We saw him last week. If you remember, he was the big disputant with the Aruch HaShulchan about... You say potato, I say potato. Right, that was the question of potatoes, whether potatoes were Ola Shulchan Malachim. Right, so if you remember, he said yes, and then the Aruch HaShulchan said, oh, yeah, that was 100 years ago when they didn't have any potatoes in Europe, and they were importing them, and it was a fancy thing. But right, that's this same author of the Chachmas Adam, very important posek. So he gives the following case, and remember, it's interesting, it's a big chumrah. So far, we saw one little chumrah from the Shulchan Aruch, that even if they don't know about your food, but if they intend to cook, then it's a problem. So the Chachmas Adam takes it one step further and even has a bigger chumra. Underline part. Venerally, to hu hadin imhetzis or bitanur beis hachoref lechamim habayis. What if you come in, right, again, you don't turn on the heat like at a thermostat in the olden days. You boiled the water. There was some... You turned on the oven, basically. That was the same source of heat for the whole house. So what if you come in and you turn on, not to cook anything, because the house is freezing. You want to turn on the heat. That's the heat. But, v'hayomid kidera, that should be a dalid, shum, we're not talking about cooking blood here. And you didn't realize, or the non-Jew I should say, didn't realize, that there was a pot on the oven or in the fire. V'nach le'yadam izeh, v'nispashel. What would you say? Mutter. He says it's okay. But again, it's a fascinating case that he raises.
Cooking and heating.
Yeah.
And a non-G turns it on, but it has two purposes.
The question is, why did he do it? That's exactly the point. That's exactly. If the answer is he wanted to do both, then it's a problem, I think. Again, this oven, however, whatever exactly the case of the Chochmas Adam is, again, I don't exactly know what the oven looked like. This oven clearly did both. His point, though, is that the guy who did it only had intention for one thing. He didn't even know about the other thing. If his intent was something that's not cooking, you could be lenient. Now, if his intent was to cook one thing and he didn't know that you had something there, then that would be exactly what the Shulchan Aruch already told us is a problem. But he has a different shade of a case, or at least for this, he's lenient. And I want to give you another leniency. If you look at, in my version, in my edition of this Sefer, the Chochmas Adam, so in the back, they have what's called Likutei Ha'aretz, which is a collection of additional notes. I think that might have been done by the contemporary publishers of the book. I don't think it's anything authoritative or ancient. But they quote a relatively older source, the Sefer Cheker Halacha. Okay, not such a well-known source or person, I don't even know who wrote it. But the point is, they quote the following case. Look at the underlying part. Poshet, he says, he thinks it's obvious to be lenient. Another case. Ima goynis gavein Lavashel Dover Shenechal Kamoshuhai. This is right. This is why you guys have Baruch Hashem, you're all very smart. You can recall what we learned a month ago. Food that is edible raw, carrots, vegetables, are not a problem of Bishulakum, even if the guy cooked them completely. That's one of the leniencies that's built in. It has to be something that was inedible raw. So what about if you have a case where then you have your vegetables? And intentionally, you gave them to the non-Jew, and he intentionally wanted to cook them, but there's no problem with that. However, unbeknownst to the non-Jew, in the oven at the same time, was also other food, which does need to be cooked, which could be a problem. And it hadn't been cooked yet. What would you say? I could have easily thought to be machmir. So he's saying no. I think you're right. If you remember way back, when we learned this halacha, we asked the same question I asked you before, why? The answer then, which we gave, was not the answer we gave now, although maybe some people did say that, I don't remember. But the answer I remember primarily we gave, when we said why, it had nothing to do with the weddings and stuff. It was that if it's edible raw, it's not considered, I remember from the beginning, I think it was the Ritva who said this, we shared this from. That's not considered cooking on the part of the non-Jew. Again, he cooked it. Halachically, it's an inconsequential act. It doesn't rate on the halachic radar screen, and in this case, that's a good thing. Because if it would rate, it would be a problem if we noticed it. It's an unnoticeable reality. So what basically he's saying is something very, very sharp. Again, sometimes things are too sharp. I could see someone disagreeing with this. My first instinct was a little bit like Sima. Then maybe you should be Machmir.
If you look at the words of the Shulchan Aruch, Kigon Shehesik Hatanor Levashel.
Right, so you're understanding. Right. Again, I can't tell you definitively, is it possible that he thinks that he would, if you asked him, he would acknowledge that he's arguing with the Shulchan Aruch? I don't know. But if we don't know that for sure, if someone doesn't tell us they're arguing with the Shulchan Aruch, we don't like to assume that. Again, but I wouldn't rule out the possibility. Maybe he is arguing. I don't know. But I would assume that he's not. And if he's not, I think the only argument to be made is the one that you just made, which is very sharp. Again, maybe it's too sharp. Maybe someone would disagree with it. But I think that must be the answer. That if, as long as you have intent to do something which is halachically inconsequential, in this case, cooking something that's edible raw, then that is as if you were planning on burning out of agam, singeing the hair, whatever. It's not considered cooking. It does not fall into the category of Niskavim Labashio. Now, maybe you could disagree. And if those who are looking for a chumrah, I'll send them to you. But this is quoted by a number of other poskim. After I saw it here, I saw it was quoted in other svarim as well. All in the name of the same Sefer, the Cheker Halacha. Now, there is another case in which the Tur, now this is a very important, the Tur is obviously a very authoritative source, where the Tur is Machmir. We just saw two leniencies in a row, now we'll see a debated case. The case where, what was the source that we had closest to cooking in the Gemara, was the guy threw in his peg into an oven. What did the Gemara tell us? If you turn back the page, it's very important to read the line of the language of the Gemara at the end there. What did he say? Right. Well, actually, I take it back. It doesn't say it as explicitly as I thought, but what is the clear implication? Cover by Yisrael, kara mei kara. Meaning, as we explained it then, what was the point? Did the non-Jew even know about the gourd? Didn't even know about it. Well, as I said, it was like somehow tucked under the logs. Comes along the Tur and has the following chumrah. Well, let me add that. So that's case number one. Case number two is when the guy, we just saw from the Chachmas Adam and others, let's say the guy is intending to heat the house. And he didn't even know that there's food in there. Even though he's turning on an oven, still okay. What about if you overlap the cases and you say the following? On the one hand, he's turning on the oven to heat up the house because it's freezing cold. Not because he wants to cook anything, but he knows that there is food in there. What do you say?
So therefore, even if he didn't intend to cook, because he's actually...
Well, it's a debated point, but yes, what the Tur says, I'm saying, you'll see, no matter what you say, any opinion you say right now, you'll be okay, because this is a machlokas. So it's a question of which side you take.
He doesn't have intent to cook.
He's intending to heat up the house, but he does know... But he does know that the food's in there. So let's see how this plays out. So the Tur says, if you look here, underline part, Im yada shahaya basar batanor, he's coming home just to heat up the house, but he knows that there's meat in the oven. Afilu chamamo liyavesh kli, again, he wanted to dry out kli or heat the house. It's a separate point. The point is his intentions are completely removed from cooking. Nevertheless, says the Tur, usher. Interesting, why? Chayshina, a little bit what Ora was implying. Chayshina and Shema Kiven Gam Levishal Kevish Yadabo. He did know about it, so perhaps even though his primary intention, his initial intention was to heat the house, to dry the pot, whatever the case was, but once he opened the oven and he saw the meat there, perhaps a little bit of part of him said, ah, you know what? Chveis, I don't know, my boss will be so happy because he didn't even ask me to do it yet, and I'm pre-warming, pre-cooking his food. Right. Okay. But again, essentially, he says, Chayshina, and again, no, I don't think, it's not a contradistinction to what we start off, meaning what the Tur is being mechadesh, is that you can have primary and secondary intent. And that secondary intent would be sufficient to cause a problem. Primarily, his intent is, whatever it is, to heat the house, let's say. But as long as there's a worry, and here, again, if you know definitively he had intention for both, then everyone would be machmir. But here, the Tur has a big chumrah. We're worried. Maybe he had a secondary intent to cook, and we have to be machmir. Comes along the Beis Yosef. That's Maran HaMechaber. And he quotes this, and he very, very, in short words, he wields a sharp pen. V'lo ra'iti le'echen me'aposkim she'kasav kein. Boom. He quotes the Tur, but he says, listen, buddy, it's in the Tur, but it didn't make it any further. No one's quoting this chumrah. And then I won't get into it for the lack of time, he then continues to explain, I didn't give you enough of the previous paragraph of the Beis Yosef for you to give a full picture of this, but based on a previous analysis, he then explains why he thinks it should be lenient. But bottom line is, he says, no one's quoting this. And the Shulchan Aruch himself then never quotes such a chumrah. The truth is, though, it's not just the Tur. The Beis Yosef couldn't have known that because it was after he had already died. But the same, our good friend, the Chachmas Adam, who gave us a leniency on top of the page. Here he's Machmer. He doesn't quote the Tur by name, but he gives the same Shita. Afilu im kivein lechamem habayis. Again, getting back to the case of the guy had intention just to heat the house. Do you not have a sheet? Oh, you do have a sheet. Okay, I don't worry for a moment. Even if his intent was to heat the house, elish yada sheisham basar asar, the mistama, he has an even stronger language. Again, if you're sensitive to the nuance. The Tur said chayshinan, we're worried maybe he had a fear. But this, the Chachmas Adam is more like the family Kelman. right? He did know about it, so mistama he had intention, right? I'll add, like Sima said, because he could have just taken it out. So once he had it in there and he knew about it, presumably he had intent. When that was not, wasn't the primary reason. The primary reason is to heat the house. But the bottom line is, if he had any level of intent, it should be a problem. This is the Chumrah position. Comes along the Aruch HaShulchan, and he parrots the Beis Yosef. And he says, looking at the second line, middle, Aval Rov HaPoskim, Lo Sfir Lekein. Most Poskim never say this. So what is his practical guidance? Bottom line, and underline part, Ubelo Hefseid Meruba, Ro'i Lachush Ledeyazu. Because if it's something that's really very minor, then Taka, even though it's not a majority opinion, it is the Tur, it is the Chachmas Adam, and there's even a certain rationale to it. It's not a crazy Chumrah, as we would say. Therefore, says Aruch HaShulchan, it's worth being Machmir in a case where it's really a negligible loss. If it's a significant loss, a Hefzid Meruba, so then you have a right to be lenient, as the Beis Yosef said, because it seems that this is certainly a very minority opinion. Now, you'll ask me, what is Hefzid Meruba? I don't know. We'll have to take that on a case-by-case basis. That's not that is not answerable in general terms. Okay? Ad kan, to conclude our basic topic for the evening, of the question of intent. Again, what emerges from this is another detail or nuance which potentially has the possibility for leniency in Bishul Akum, and that is that we have refined our understanding of the Gzeira of Chazal. Namely, it has to have the intent, and I'll add primarily or secondarily, to cook, even if it was to cook his own food. But if that's the case, and he cooked your food and he wanted to cook, then we are machmir that it's a problem. But chutz mizeh, if that's not the case, because after all he was just burning out the agam, or to give our practical example, it was the power company just turning on the electricity, or it was somebody in the house flipping the switch on the circuits, in all of those cases, we have a right to be lenient. The one debatable case that we had at the end was, what if he has intention primarily to do something else, to warm the house, or whatever the case may be, but he is aware that his action is going to have the effect of cooking for you? Are we choshesh, or do we even say mistama, he had that intent, as the Torah and the Chachmas Adam and the Kelmans want to say? Or do we have a right to be lenient, as the Beis Yosef implies most poskim are? We concluded that the Aruch HaShulchan said, in that one debatable case, perhaps, ideally, one should be machmir, unless it is a case of serious loss. Last case for tonight, which will then have Mirza Sam set us up for a bigger topic starting next week, is the question of doubt. What if you're not sure? And he doesn't use this as an example, but perhaps to just have a segue between our two topics tonight, many of the things that we just discussed, you could imagine there'd be a very fine line. Did he know about the food when he cooked it or not? Let's say you're not sure. Let's say we want to be machmir like the tour. If he knew about the food, even though he wanted to heat the house, but if he knew about it, it's a problem. What if we're not sure he did? What if we're not sure? What if, and this is going to be the primary case that we're going to see discussed, for argument's sake, let's assume that if the Jew cooks part of the food enough to at least make it edible, minimally, and even if the non-Jew does most of the other cooking, let's assume for now that would be okay. Let's say you have a piece of meat that was, for half part of the time, the Jew stood at the grill, part of the time the non-Jew did. But you're not exactly sure, did the Jew stand long enough to make it edible or not? Let's say you're not sure. Do you have to be machmir in a case of doubt or not? That's the question I want to end with tonight.
So
doubt, yes.
Can I just backtrack?
Oh!
Just think about something.
Yes.
If we go back to the original idea of chasmas, then this guy, knowing about the piece of meat,
he may be trying to ingratiate himself.
Yeah.
So you are still want to be machmir. Very good.
No, because
you're allowed. It's okay.
Right.
Okay. You don't have to apologize.
No.
The tour and the Chachmas Adam and now Family Kelman, that's all Gimel Regalim Ha'olam Omeid. Why not? I understand. The Aruch HaShulchan says you should try to be machmir.
I know, but I'm saying going back to the original.
You want to be machmir, even have some meruba. Okay, listen, you know. What can I tell you? When they'll call you for shilas, they'll have to accept what you tell them. I'm saying, yeah, it's a very compelling argument. I don't disagree with you. My instinct would be Mekel if the Aruch HaShulchan lets us be Mekel, but I hear what you're saying completely. Yes? The question is whether you have a right to be lenient if I tell you you can be, if you're convinced it's wrong. That's a philosophical question, yeah.
But doubt is then a question of what the intention was, not who
actually. Well, let's see the case. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's just see the case. We don't have to speculate. Let's just see the case, and then we'll be done for tonight. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Hiniach Yisrael al Gabi Hesh. Let's say the Jew put the meat on the fire. Hiniach Ovik Kochavim LaShamro. And then he said, listen, I got to run out, because I just realized I'm missing seasoned salt. Watch it. Make sure it doesn't burn. V'hochach Bo. And then he comes back, and he realizes that the non-Jew flipped the burger. You got to flip the burger. If you want to cook it well, you got to flip the burger. Burger as in hamburger, sorry. And guess when the Ein Yadua, and he's not sure, Im Silka Ovik Kochavim Ashlo Yigil Amacha Ben Shusai, or not. You're not sure if it had already been basically edible before the non-Jew flipped it, or did it only become edible through the action of the non-Jew subsequently. And again, the Shulchan Aruch is assuming that is an important question. Now, we haven't yet studied together to know that this is the case. You'll have to trust me on the Shulchan Aruch for now, that maybe this will be debated, we'll have to see, but at least the Shulchan Aruch is going to paskin, as long as the Jew starts off cooking it to minimal, we'll assume that's one-third of what needs to be done to actually be enjoyably eaten. One-third is considered minimally edible. Then, even if the non-Jew finishes the final two-thirds, it would be okay. So if you assume that as a given, that's what the Shulchan Aruch is, that's the background here. But what if you're not sure? You're not sure, did the Jew cook one-third, or maybe he cooked even less? Maybe it was only one-fifth. It's a big question. What is the Shulchan Aruch paskin? Mutter. You have a right to be lenient. Comes along the Ramah, and he adds, parentheses, to Safek Divrehem. Lohakel. After all, the whole institution of Bishalakam is a big Chumrah. Mita Rabbanan. Therefore, we have a right to be lenient in a case of doubt on a rabbinic prohibition like we have any other. He adds, V'chein kol safek bishulei v'kochavim u'chayotzei ba mutter. This begs your question. What kind of doubts are we talking about? A doubt of knowledge, a doubt of, it sounds like from the Ramah, any case of doubt in bishulakim is mutter. Safek derabanan l'kula. Any questions?
So in terms of, say, kalim,
okay.
If non-Jew cooks for themselves,
okay.
Because they're cooking for themselves, and that would make them... Does it make it true?
There's no chumra of bishalakim when he cooks for himself. You have a different problem, is that it might be treif pots.
No, if everything's, the ingredients are fine, everything's fine, but he's cooking in your pot.
In your pot?
In your pot.
For you, let's say.
No, for him.
Okay.
Would that make your pots treif?
That's not, why you ask, that's nothing to do with what we just learned.
No, because, sort of is, because it's like, yeah. If he's cooking for himself.